A black and white Dymo tape label spells out the words Paramount Vantage. Outside a small cinema showing the film First Blood, a dozen or so solemn-looking people in drab plain clothes are standing in front of the entrance steps. A middle-aged man in a plain casual jacket hands a Bible to a brown-haired boy who steps forward from the group, looks around apprehensively, and reads.
O God, our Heavenly Father, who has commanded us to love one another as thy children.
Inside the cinema.
I could have killed them all. I could have killed you. Been telling you the law. Out here, it's me. Don't push it. Don't push it, I'll give you a war you won't believe. Let it go. Let it go.
Cinema goers dressed in 1980s clothes sit in rows of red seats, watching Sly Stallone as John Rambo. In an empty aisle, a short-haired boy of about 11 in a yellow t-shirt sits videoing the film with a VHS camcorder and puffing at a cigarette. The young video pirate, Lee Carter, bounds down the steps of the cinema with a rucksack on his back. He legs it across a road and down a leafy residential street. Paramount Vantage and Celluloid Dreams Productions present In Association with Good, a co-production with Arte France Cinema. Lee finds a football on the pavement. He picks it up and hurls it at a man on a ladder who's pruning the branches of a tree. The man falls off. A network movie in association with Sophie Cinema 2 and 3. Lee scampers on down the street past suburban families going about their business. One family piled into a Volvo. Outside another house, a man washes his souped-up Ford Escort. A hammer and tongs film. Lee runs on past a large white house on the leafy street. In white letters, the title, Son of Rambo, spelt R-A-M-B-O-W. In the kitchen of the house, a woman in her 30s wearing a headscarf and an apron over a long, plain cotton dress, hand washes a sheet in the sink. A hatch in the kitchen wall leads through into a plainly decorated room beyond, where a young girl, also in a headscarf, is kneeling on the floor in front of a silver-haired old woman who's asleep in an armchair. In a shed in the back garden, Will, the brown-haired boy who was made to read the Bible outside the cinema, sits at a table painting over printed text in a leather-bound Bible. Two pages are filled with small watercolor drawings of beasts and landscapes. A yellow lion, a grazing dinosaur, rolling hills, and a blue fish. Will flicks the corners of some sketchbooks where he's made some drawings, creating simple animations. A fish swims, in another, a plane explodes, and in another, a dinosaur eats a bird out of the sky. Will takes a bite out of a slice of apple. Then he gets up and crosses the cluttered shed. Bending over, he delves into a clump of straw inside a box, and two mice pop up. He places a piece of apple close to them and goes back to the table, picking up his school satchel. With his hands thrust in his trouser pockets, he crosses to the door. Hanging on the inside of the door is a man's overcoat. Will rests his forehead against it and inhales deeply, taking in its smell. He takes something out of the pocket and turns round. It's a gent's wristwatch with a metal strap. He holds it up in the air and gazes at it. He looks at it with a serene smile. Outside the black iron gates of a long school entrance path, he arrives with his mother Mary, his little sister Jess, and his grandma, all of whom are wearing headscarves.
William, your lace.
Mary lets go of Grandma's wheelchair to do up Will's laces and spots the watch in his hand.
William, where did you find this? This watch doesn't belong to you, do you understand? Jess. You put it back where you found it, William.
He hurries down the school path, holding the watch to his ear. On the grass near the path, a woman supervises a stage being set up. A banner above it reads, French Exchange Friends.
Comme ça, tout droit. Tout droit comme ça un petit peu plus. Très bien, bravo, c'est magnifique.
In a toilet cubicle, Will is drawing on a wall. The drawings are similar to the ones in the Bible, but even more whimsical. An octopus walks along some grass, and a mouse plays a heart-shaped harp next to a bar. In a corridor, he unlocks a locker with a key. There are cigarette cards with animal pictures on, and a long white feather stuck to the inside of the locker door. He takes a pine cone from the shelf and shuts the locker. Running the pine cone along two radiators, he strolls down the corridor, then stops to drink from a water tap. In a classroom, he sits at his desk, his cheeks bulging.
Listen, and you do well to keep your wits about you when I talk about scree. Okay, so showtime. Thanks for your help. We're going to be watching a documentary now, and you're not allowed to watch television, are you? Right, you've got something to be getting on with. Okay, good.
Will leaves the packed class as the bearded teacher wheels a TV into place.
Must be messing around with, all right?
Outside the classroom, Will dumps his satchel and climbs up onto a chair. There's a glass fishbowl standing on a bookshelf next to it. Spitting the gobful of water that he's taken from the tap into the bowl, Will marks the new water level on the glass with a coloured pencil. Other marks below show the water levels for the three preceding months, starting in March. He sits down and doodles. At the far end of the corridor, a teacher and a boy come out of a classroom.
What? You don't know where
I told you I don't have a tennis ball!
The teacher leaves the boy in the corridor. The boy gives the classroom door the finger and slides down the wall to the floor. It's Lee Carter, the boy who was illegally taping First Blood inside the cinema. Will sees him lazily bouncing a tennis ball against the wall and leans back in the chair so his head is blocked by the bookcase. Lee stops bouncing the ball, and Will pokes his head out. Lee hurls the ball straight at him. Will puts his sketchbook down to retrieve the ball. He turns round to find Lee's got his sketchbook in his hands.
Nice drawings. My book. Oh, sorry. There you go. Now you want it. You said you want it, huh?
As they struggle, the fishbowl gets knocked over and Will gets soaked.
Morning, Janet. A couple of miscreants for the attention of... She must be...
Lee tries to creep off.
Lee Carter, sit down.
Yeah.
Sit down.
What?
She's got some vitus dance, that one, I can tell you. Okay, thank you.
Lee.
What is your name?
Will stares ahead nervously. Lee grabs the sketchbook from his hands and looks at it.
Will Proudfoot. Listen, mate, I don't mind taking the blame for this if you like. But if I do, you might have to give me something in return.
He points to Will's watch.
Fair enough. I always fancied a watch. Still, you probably don't mind getting a letter sent home and being tortured. Oh, didn't you know? About the torture? Oh, yeah. Last time she tortured me, I could barely stand up for a week. Pain like you'd never believe. Doctor said they might have to amputate it off. Well, can't keep the lady waiting, can we?
The boys stand up.
Let's just get this over and done.
Will looks unhappily at the watch and hands it to Lee.
I'll pray for you, Lee Carter. Cheers.
Cheeky-faced Lee grins, then makes a run for it as the school secretary has her back turned. The headmaster's buzzer keeps going off on the corridor wall. Outside, Will runs to the base of a tree and curls up with his head in his hands.
Dear God, make sure Lee Carter doesn't get too badly hurt.
School kids stampede past him to welcome the French exchange students getting off a coach. Will wanders over to the waving crowd, and his mouth dropping open in awe, he watches a curly-haired brunette come down the coach steps. English schoolgirl grimaces as she greets the French girl, who has a mouthful of train tracks.
David is smart. Voici Monsieur Jacques Dupont. Duncan Miller.
Yep.
Voici Monsieur Didier Rebel.
Pointy red boots appear in the doorway at the top of the coach steps. The band on stage stops, and the English kids gasp as they look at the boy wearing them. He's got a black jumpsuit on over a red string vest and large square sunglasses. His hair is black with dyed blonde streaks and has been combed in the style of a new romantic. He pops a chewing gum bubble and beckons to the French teacher for her mic as he surveys the English kids in their grey uniforms.
Bonjour. L'Angleterre.
Subtitles read, Hello, England. The English kids are gobsmacked.
Bienvenue, Didier.
The French boy, Didier, coolly tosses his black and red vinyl satchel to Duncan, his chubby ginger host. Will looks through the crowd and sees Lee pickpocketing a teacher. Realizing that Will's seen him, Lee starts feigning pain.
Let me help you, Lee Carter.
God, that bitch was rough. Oh, she must have loved that bloody goldfish. I'll be right, though, in a week. Maybe two, I don't know.
A schoolgirl comes over.
Oh, can you smell that? That stench is the smell of Lee Carter.
Up yours, Taylor.
Scab.
Slapper.
Scab.
Slapper.
Scab.
I blame the parents. Well, that's me then. I better be off. Oh. No, don't worry, I'll be fine. Oh, time heals all wounds.
Oh, God. Lee limps away. In a bike shed, he nimbly tries a key in some of the padlocks securing the bikes. The third chain he tries unlocks. Will watches him pull out the bike.
Had to be the one with the bloody trailer on the back, didn't it?
Where are you going? Oh, the head said I could have the afternoon off, you know, after her torturing me. But how can you cycle with your leg all bad?
On a narrow country lane, Lee sits in the bike trailer as Will pedals him along.
Right here?
Yeah, exactly.
Will steers the bike past a field full of cows. In the trailer behind him, Lee goes through Will's satchel and pulls out the illustrated Bible. He browses through it as Will carries on cycling. The boys arrive at the wire-fenced open entrance of a disused power station. Will stops the bike by the gates.
Is this where you live?
Yeah, this is it. It's my ass here. Of course it isn't, you idiot. It's a shortcut. Keep pedaling.
Will cycles on towards three giant chimneys which tower up into the blue sky and carries on past the crisscross cement framework of an industrial building. With the power station behind him, he pedals on down a pathway lined with hedgerows. He cycles into the courtyard of a nursing home, where a large tree casts a shadow over the driveway. A nurse in white is having a smoke outside. Inside the care home...
Hey, boy! That video you're sending me? It all wonky! I can't see nothing but fuzzy lights!
Yeah, I told you about that before, Doris. You're tracking!
Leaning on Will, Lee hobbles along and peers into a room where a white-haired man is sitting up in bed.
You all right, Frank?
Lee, reaching into the room, swipes a piggy bank from Frank's bed tray and rattles it at Will.
That's Frank.
So, this is where you live?
Oh no, this is the family business. My home's just through here.
Still keeping up the act of being injured, Lee leads his friend through a gloomy, darkened office towards another door, which leads out into the wing of an opulently decorated house. A chandelier is suspended from the hallway ceiling and gilt-framed paintings hang on the walls. The boys turn a corner past a white marble statue and come into a spacious kitchen.
So, this is your home?
Yep, this is it. Home sweet home.
Failing to break the piggy bank open with a potato masher, Lee wanders through another door into a cavernous garage and turns on the strip lights. As the lights come on, Will looks round open-mouthed at the garage, which is filled with household goods. Novelty statues are stacked on shelves and dozens of videotapes are piled on top of a VCR.
Oh, that's it.
Tossing the piggy bank to Will, Lee takes a crossbow out of a box. He glances behind him and sees Will licking the piggy bank.
What are you doing?
Will shrugs. Lee, with the plastic-wrapped crossbow under his arm, takes back the piggy bank with a quizzical look.
I know what we could do.
You don't tell me bears they are hiding.
Then I have no choice but to shoot you and your cat. Do you have any last requests?
Skills on tugs.
Lee crouches to collect money from the smashed piggy bank.
You know, I've been thinking. The watch is nice, but, well, it only really covers me getting tortured. I did have to, you know, take the blame and lie. What do I get for all that?
I don't have another watch.
Don't mean another watch. Look, I get to choose how you pay me back, right?
Right.
Right, to properly pay me back, you are going to be the stuntman in the film I'm making for Screen Test, and you're not allowed to tell anyone, or I'll smash your face in. All right?
What, Screen Test?
Exactly, top secret. Oh, shit, it's Lawrence.
Wearing a camouflage army helmet, Lee picks up the video camera on its tripod and dashes back into the garage, followed by Will, who's still carrying his school satchel. Lee pulls a ladder to a spot on the floor.
Get up there.
What?
Get up there! Go, come on!
Will scampers up the ladder and gets into a rowing boat which is hanging from the ceiling. Three older boys come in.
Lawrence!
You made them pirate copies of Rambo for me?
Yeah, actually, I was just doing it.
Yeah? Don't be using my camera for that Screen Test bollocks.
As Lawrence's two mates hold Lee down, Lawrence opens the fake door of a washing machine. There's a safe inside. He opens it and puts in a package.
Wait, come on.
Get off! Ow!
He and his two mates leave the garage.
More torture. Yeah, it's not my day.
Lee gets up from the floor, rubbing his elbow. He goes over to the VCR and slides in a tape, pressing play. His pirate version of Rambo comes on. Hearing the music from the film, Will peeks his head over the side of the boat and watches the TV monitor. Lee puts a tape into another VCR, presses record, and starts to run out of the garage.
Oh yeah, stay there, I'll be back in a minute.
Hello, mate. Ooh. What is that all about?
He comes out of the care home carrying a tray over to his brother Lawrence, who's a surly-faced soul boy with slim trousers and a blue preppy cardigan.
Happy birthday, bro. Oi!
Lawrence opens a box on the tray.
You thought I forgot, didn't you?
He takes Will's wristwatch from the box and inspects it. Blank-faced, he holds the watch to his ear, puts it on his wrist, and turns away from his brother to wash his sleek black Triumph TR7. Lee retreats back towards the care home.
These are very nice. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Don't push it. I'll give you a war you won't believe.
In the garage, Will is still in the boat watching First Blood. His mouth hangs half open as the colours from the screen glow off his innocent-looking face.
You don't seem to want to accept the fact that you're dealing with an expert in guerrilla warfare. With a man who's the best. With guns, with knives, with his bare hands. A man who's been trained to ignore pain, ignore weather. To live off the land. To eat things and to make a billy goat puke. In Vietnam, his job was to dispose of enemy personnel. To kill, period. Win by attrition. Well, Rambo was the best.
Are you telling me that 200 men against your boy is a no-win situation for us?
You send that money, don't forget one thing.
What?
A good supply of body bags.
200 men?
As Lawrence and his mates speed off in the TR-7, Lee dashes back to the garage.
It's gone.
He replaces the tape in the VCR with another tape.
Well, you can calm down now.
This one is labelled Screen Test. He presses play.
Yeah. Do you have any last requests?
On the monitor, Lee shoots the piggy bank off Will's head with the crossbow.
Oh, stuntman, your face was well funny on that one.
He climbs the ladder and looks into the rowing boat, but Will has gone. In a field of tall grass, Will is bounding down a hill holding the crossbow arrow like it's a machine gun. A shaggy dog chases him to a stile. Will climbs over and pretends to shoot back at him.
Henry, come back here!
He legs it through the disused power plant like a fugitive on the run, passing a pile of wrecked cars. Sprinting through another field of tall golden grass, he stops in front of a tall scarecrow made of branches, with sack material over the top and a large paint tin for a head. He stabs at the scarecrow with the arrow. He looks up at the scarecrow's painted head and its jagged cut-out mouth. The scarecrow explodes into life, grabbing him by the face. Will imagines himself as a muscular mini Rambo.
I am the son of Rambo! What have you done with my dad?
The scarecrow opens its sack garment, and an animated doorway is revealed, with John Rambo on the other side. Will drops down onto a path, cutting through doodled trees and bushes, and dashes down it. In the sky, a shaggy dog with aeroplane wings dives towards him. Will drops through trees to the forest floor. A mouth opens up on his brawny shoulder and speaks to him.
The sins you commit are for the good of others.
Will swings open a door to see John Rambo chained up in a room. He knocks the scarecrow out and hauls Rambo across his shoulders. Rambo's chains fall off.
Come on, Dad! We're going home!
Will wakes up bolt upright in a bed. He looks across the room and sees his granny sleeping soundly in another bed. He picks up the arrow, strokes the feather flight across his cheek, and falls back onto the bed with a deep sigh. It's daytime at school. Didier, the outlandish-looking French student, comes out of some double doors in skinny black jeans, a black t-shirt, and a red and black leather waistcoat. On his shoulder, he carries a ghetto blaster. As he struts importantly down a walkway lined with stone columns, a group of boys in grey school uniforms form a V-shape behind him, resembling a star's entourage. Will hides behind a column and throws his pine cone. He chalks a cross onto the column. In the toilet cubicle, he finishes a drawing of a kid coming down a zip line with the words Son of Rambo above it. He admires his handiwork. Later, sitting on the chair outside his classroom, while the other kids are watching TV, he wraps his school tie around his head. He looks up in surprise as Lee is pushed out of his classroom and left in the corridor again by his teacher. Lee strides purposefully towards Will, who jumps up from his chair apprehensively as Lee stops in front of him.
You told anyone you were over at my house? I swear to God, if you tell anyone I'm making this film, I'll smash your face in. You still owe me, right? So be at my house at 10 tomorrow. Don't be late.
He runs off. A boy pokes his head out of Will's classroom.
Finish watching TV then. Come back in.
Will takes his tie off his head and goes back in.
Yes, I promise to astonish you with news of how a river can operate above the level of the floodplain. Okay, and how do they do that? How does a river operate above the level?
Sitting at his desk at the back of the classroom, Will looks out of the window and sees Didier gliding past on a skateboard, followed by his eager entourage of boys. Will leans over his desk and rests his head on it. His gaze directs itself to his sketchbook, where he started a page flip animation involving Son of Rambo in the corner of one of the pages. At home in the kitchen, Mary says grace at the table, watched by Granny, Jess, and Will. Will picks up his fork. Jess has a finger in her mouth.
Jess!
Mary glowers at Will.
Only you could lose something strapped to your wrist. I should have taken it off you at the school gate.
She feeds Granny.
You're not to go in that shed again. Do you understand? Do you understand?
Will plays with his food and gives a small nod. His mother tries to compose herself as she feeds Granny.
I need you all up early for the preaching tomorrow.
But I can't come.
Of course you can.
No, see, there's this boy at school.
Yeah, there's lots of boys at school.
No, I mean, this one was badly hurt. And I promised to help him with his chores tomorrow.
Will looks at Mary with his innocent blue eyes. Mary, in her headscarf, wipes mashed food away from Granny's baggy, wrinkled face.
What happened to him?
He had a terrible accident. And I promised I'd help him with his chores tomorrow.
Mary's stony face softens a little.
That's very kind of you. Look, I'm sorry for getting angry. What time is it? Anyway, you can go and help this boy if you want.
Thanks, Mummy.
Sausage and bacon sizzle away in a pan as Lee cooks breakfast for his brother in their spacious kitchen. Lawrence comes by in his dressing gown.
2 minutes.
Lee goes to the door as Lawrence browses idly through a magazine. Outside the door, Will shrugs off a coat. Underneath, he's dressed as Rambo.
Good morning, Lee Carter.
I'm here to help you.
Jesus Christ.
Where the bacon's burning!
Lee reopens the front door.
Get in that bush.
Will obediently dives into a bush.
I'm waiting in the bush. Shh.
Who was it?
Some Bible basher. Yeah.
Lee serves up breakfast.
Want our sauce on that or what?
Putting the sauce on the counter, he hurries out.
Wait, what about my tea?
At the power station. A barrel hits a seesaw and catapults Will into some boxes.
You're right! I'm
all right, Lee Carter! Ready? Yeah, ready! And action!
Will slides down a steep grassy hill on a food tray. Lee doubles up with laughter. Will climbs to the top of an A-ladder in a field and gets hit with a jet of water, sending him flying backwards. Sitting on a branch halfway up a thick tree in a forest, Will jumps off, holding onto an open umbrella.
Right, cut. It's all right, Will. Will? It's all right, buddy.
Lee picks up the umbrella. There's nobody underneath.
Wait, what are you doing?
Will charges towards the camera. He runs about, flailing his arms.
Now, you want to be the son of Rambo?
Will climbs onto a rotten tree trunk and stands with his hands on his hips. He jumps down and picks up an alarm clock.
I have to go now.
Yeah, well, you better come back tomorrow. I ain't finished yet.
Okay, bye then.
Oh, and I'm glad your legs are feeling better.
Son of Rambo sprints off.
Nutcase.
Lee shakes his head. Mary unlocks her front door and comes in. Following her, the man in the casual cream jacket, Joshua, pushes Granny in a wheelchair. Hearing something, they go through to the kitchen, where the table has been laid. Will brings a casserole dish out of the oven.
Oh. I don't know if I've made enough of five. I could share mine with you if you like, Brother Joshua.
Oh, no. Well, that won't be, I'm not staying. I'll see you in the morning for prayer meeting.
Mary follows him out. Will takes the lid off the casserole dish, lays it down, and stabs at the air with a flurry of Rambo punches. He stops as his mother pokes her head back in, beams, and pops back out. As Will goes on punching the air, Joshua sees him through a glass panel in the door as he leaves. Didier, with his entourage behind him, are riding bikes down a country track. Didier points an air pistol at the sky, shoots, and a bird knocks one of his fans off his bike. The others carry on regardless. At night in the back garden, lights come on in the shed. Will is using a wood saw to break the sole off one of his shoes. He stops for a second and glances at the window. Gritting his teeth, he saws at the shoe again and splits the front of the sole off the bottom with his two hands.
Ah, you all set?
Yeah, Mother had another accident in the night.
Ah, oh dear.
2 minutes.
Of course.
He comes into the kitchen where Joshua is waiting for Mary.
I tried to dress Grandma, but Jess took over.
William?
Yes?
Your shoes. Well, have you got something else to wear? We're leaving for prayer meeting now. Oh, William.
Shall I take them to the mender's and meet you there?
Yes, take some money from my purse and meet us there. Sorry about this.
Not a problem.
Will takes some coins and goes to leave.
Good morning, William.
Good morning, Brother Joshua.
Will goes out. Joshua peeks out of the glass panel in the door and watches him. Then he surveys the kitchen. At a shoe mender's, Will lifts his split shoes up onto the counter. The unshaven mender, wearing a cloth cap, inspects them.
She'll be ready by 3 o'clock.
He hands Will a receipt. Will reaches down into his bag, takes out his alarm clock, and sets it.
Thank you.
He leaves the shop in just his socks. In a supermarket, he wanders up an aisle, putting some items into his basket, and stops by a shelf of soft drinks. Peering through a gap between some stacked tins of Coke, he sees Lee in the next aisle looking around suspiciously. Picking up 2 flashlights from a shelf, Lee stuffs them into his silver bomber jacket. He scurries out of the supermarket entrance with his rucksack on his back, shooting a glance over his shoulder towards Will. Will thinks for a second, then starts stuffing the items from his basket down the front of his grey woolen jumper. Outside, Lee is waiting for him near the entrance.
Jesus! I've got everything! Yeah, I can see that, you freak!
Lee marches up to the bike as Will chases him down the road, his jumper bulging with the stolen items. Didier and his entourage are standing by a lamppost with its wiring hanging loose. Didier, with a cigarette in his mouth, gives a signal. The boys hold hands, Duncan touches the wiring, and the cigarette ignites. The boys cheer as Joshua and the family drive by, open-mouthed. In a meeting hall, Joshua places a wristwatch on a table next to a line of other watches and addresses a male member of the congregation.
I think that's everyone.
As the other man walks solemnly past the seated, head-scarfed women and plainly dressed men, Joshua goes to the entrance where Mary is waiting.
I'm sure he'll wait for us here.
Mary nods at him with a look of concern and makes her way into the hall with Jess. Joshua takes a last look outside and shuts the doors. Out on a country path under a bright sky, Lee in the bicycle trailer leafs through Will's painted Bible as Will pedals furiously.
What's the dog thingy?
That's the flying dog! He guards the prison! When Scarecrow keeps my dad, Rambo!
Right, why have they got him prisoner?
He's an evil Scarecrow!
And then you save him, yeah?
Yes!
All right, we'll do your story, but we're doing it my way, and that doesn't mean I have to split any of the prize with you if we win, all right?
Yes, Colonel!
Woo-hoo! Son of Rambo, take one. Click. Okay, ready, and action! I've come to save you, Rambo! We need to leave here right now, before the evil Scarecrow finds us!
Oh, what about my tea?
Oh, son, it's like a prison with them lot marching in and out every 5 minutes, shouting at you, turning you over while you're trying to sleep. Eat your food, they say. It's not fit for dogs. And the screams at night. There's folks screaming in their beds. But I don't know if they're hurting or just afraid of something.
I'm rescuing you, Father. We're going to escape.
I need to spend a penny first.
Not a mercy, boy! What are you doing? There's one that's killing you! Get over here! Get over here! Look at them, make you look so stupid! They should be ashamed what they do to you.
The boy's taking me home.
The boys was just pretending. You're not going nowhere, Pops. You're staying in your room.
Yes.
A Son of Rambo film clip.
They're on our trails. You better swing across the lake. I'll get back up. I'll meet you in the prison in 1 hour.
Don't worry. I'm trained to ignore pain and live off the land.
Just go.
Lee, in a green beret and raincoat, runs to the camera and picks up a tape recorder.
They're firing at us! Take cover! Okay!
Dressed as Rambo, Will swings on a tree rope, dangles over a lake, and falls in.
Yeah, keep swimming to the other side! Can't swim! What do you mean you can't swim?
Lee's eyes widen as Will struggles in the water.
Oh, shit!
Whipping off the Colonel Troutman-like Mac, Lee climbs the tree and dives into the lake from an overhanging branch. Treading water, he looks around for Will, but can't see him. He swims down into the depths and spots Will's limp body sinking downwards, with air bubbles floating upwards from his open mouth. He grabs Will's wrist, puts his arm around him, and swims back up towards the surface with powerful strokes. Spitting out water, he pulls Will towards the lake's edge, and the two boys clamber out onto a shallow bank, coughing and spluttering. They collapse onto the bank. With his face black with mud, Will lifts himself up and turns to Lee.
Thank you for coming to take me, Colonel Troutman.
Mary, carrying her sleeping daughter, comes out of the meeting with an anxious expression.
Will! Will!
Joshua comes up behind her, pushing Granny along in her wheelchair. By the lake, Will's alarm clock goes off.
I'll just have to say it got lost or something. I don't know.
If this film doesn't win screen test, I'm gonna be a monkey's uncle. Right, come on. We're gonna be Blood Brothers now.
What's Blood Brothers?
Come here.
Holding an open penknife, Lee takes Will's hand and slices a small cut into his palm. He does the same to himself and puts the knife down on the ground next to him. He grasps Will's hand and squeezes it in a strong handshake. Will clenches his teeth.
How long do we have to hold it like this for?
Until we hear that wood pigeon again.
The two boys lie back on the ground.
I gave your watch to my brother.
Oh, so I won't ever get it back then.
Well, he likes it.
Wasn't mine anyway. It was my dad's.
Is he pissed off with you?
He's dead.
Oh, right. How'd he die?
Mowing the lawn.
Lee tries to stifle a laugh behind the collar of his mac. Will smiles.
It wasn't the mowing that did it, you idiot. He had a thing called an aneurysm. A little vein in his head popped, and that was that. He just sort of fell to the ground, and the lawnmower kept going and tipped up and to the fence and made this really loud noise, as if it was hungry or something. Just kept going, till they switched it off.
Jesus. Hope one of my veins don't pop.
Me too.
My brother said you can kill someone with just one punch.
Really?
Yeah. If you hit them right in the nose, their bone goes up through their brain and kills them in a second.
Wow. Has he ever killed anyone like that?
No. He could if he wanted to, though. He's pretty skilled at everything.
Do you like him?
Well, yeah, of course I do. He's my brother, isn't he?
What about your dad?
My dad? No. He pissed off before I was born. And then my mum met Colin, you know, the bloke with the big hair? He owns the care home, so we all live there. It's all right, I suppose. But he lives in Spain, so my mum's always over there with him. She gets tons of duty-free and stuff. Which is kind of skill, because, like, it's mostly just me and Lawrence. We get to do what we want, muck about. There's no one to tell us off or nothing. Seriously, though, parents? You're pretty much better off without them. That's what I say.
Will looks up at the sky.
Colonel Troutman?
Yeah?
Not including the bit about losing my dad's watch. This has been my best day of all time.
Oh, you scabbed.
At his home, Will prays with his mother in the bedroom.
Oh my God, I've come to say thank you for your love today. Thank you for my family and all the friends you give to me. Guard me in the dark of night and in the morning send your light. Amen.
Mary kisses him on the forehead and turns the light out as she leaves the room. Downstairs, Joshua's waiting in the entrance hall.
He's been lying, Mary.
He's a bit confused lately. He's trying to be a good Samaritan.
Mary, you have had more than your share of loss in life, and none of us wants to see you lose your son to the outsiders, but you must speak with him now. Warn him. Let him know that the path he is on can lead only to misery, not just for himself, but for all of you. There's a group meeting tomorrow. I thought it might do him good to come along, get him back on track. Do you think you could get him out of school?
Yeah, of course. That's fine. Yeah, I'll make sure he's ready.
Joshua looks hungrily at Mary. She takes a small step away from him.
Well, good night, Mary.
He goes. Upstairs in his bed, Will has overheard the conversation. He lies on his side and tries to go to sleep. In the Brethren meeting hall the next day...
And the Lord must greatly resent the attempt to pursue a double life that goes hand in hand with the world and presuming to be fully brethren at the same time.
Joshua puts his arm round Will.
God is faithful, who has called us into the fellowship of his Son. It works out that way. Instead of being enticed, God doesn't entice anybody into evil. We're enticed, led astray, by our own flesh, according to the scripture.
Outside the supermarket, two men in red shirts and grey trousers place a life-size guide dog collection box by the front entrance. Lee pulls up on the bike with the trailer attached. He jumps off his bike, calmly lifts the collection box into the trailer, gets back on, and pedals off. As he rides away, the two men in red shirts chase after him. One of them, running straight into a woman's trolley, is sent flying.
Come on,
in the meeting hall, Joshua is chatting to the thin, middle-aged Brethren leader. A young boy with neatly combed hair crosses the hall and sits on the stage next to Will, who's on his own, looking disinterested. Joshua watches them carefully.
My father won't send us to your school. He said the pupils are a bad influence. Is it true, Brother William?
Suppose so.
Will picks at the scab on his palm, avoiding eye contact with the boy. Next to a field, Lee, wearing the green colonel's beret, is standing by the camera set up on the tripod. He puts a fake knife around his waist that makes it look like it's going through him. Picking up a bottle of ketchup, he pours some onto his t-shirt, then ambles towards a white metal gate, where a cow stands looking at him.
What are you looking at?
He stands by the camera with his hands in his pockets.
Well, you'll be wearing this stuff one day, mate.
He waits with his hands in his pockets. In Joshua's pale blue Hillman, Will is in the back seat with his head sticking out of the window, his eyes closed. The car speeds along a country lane in between fenced-off pale green fields. His eyes now open, Will looks out towards the fields and imagines mortar fire hitting the ground around them, bouncing, fizzing, and exploding in flashes of bright colour. The final blast explodes into pure blinding white. It's evening and Joshua is sitting at the kitchen table in Mary's house. She comes in and takes a seat facing him.
Thank you for taking him, Joshua.
We all need a little guidance from time to time. I'd hoped he might see me as a kind of father figure.
You're hungry?
Yes, very.
As she takes his plate away, their hands touch. Mary pulls away.
Well, I'd better be going.
He gets up from the table and puts his jacket on, watching Mary pour washing up liquid into the sink, rigid with tension. As he goes to leave, she turns and follows him to the door.
Good night, Mary.
Good night, good night.
Taking rapid, uneasy breaths, she watches him go through the windowpane in the door. At school, Didier is snogging Tina, a feisty-looking girl with wavy brown hair. Didier pulls away and mumbles in French. Subtitles read, "No thanks, love. You kiss like a camel." And that's being generous.
What was he saying?
Come with me. He thought you were great. Really, he did. Next!
Tina, one in a line of hopeful girls, has smudged lipstick all over her face. Will walks along a school wall. Lee pops out of an alley and grabs him.
Where have you been, eh? If you want to make this film in the first place, you should have just said, rather than leave me to stand on my own covered in ketchup all day. We're blood brothers, or have you not remembered that? I had to go to a meeting. It's our religion.
Oh, my itchy blue beard.
They made me go to the meeting, and it was all day.
I'm not supposed to be friends with you.
What? What's wrong with me?
I'm Plymouth Brethren.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
It's our religion.
Bollocks.
It's true. If they find out we're friends, then I'll be in the worst trouble ever. I didn't forget Lee Carter. They made me go. I swear it. On my heart. I'm not allowed to make the film with you anymore. It's forbidden.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to make it with you anyway. You, left your alarm clock in my locker. You better go and get it.
Okay.
Will meekly follows Lee down the alley. The two boys arrive by a row of wooden lockers. As Lee unlocks one with a key, Will looks down at the floor.
Son of Rambo, say hello to your new flying dog.
Did you make this?
Yep.
You made my flying dog?
And we've got 10 minutes before lesson starts. Come on, let's go.
It looks just like my drawings!
All right, you ready?
Yep.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, go!
The guide dog has been attached to a kite, which takes off into the air. Will steers the canine kite as Lee films it with a video recorder. Near to the school building, Didier is snogging another girl. Behind him, the line of hopefuls has got longer. He pulls away from the girl and shakes his head at Duncan.
No.
Thanks for coming. Next, Lucy Rogers, monsieur.
Didier replies, I'm trapped in a world of boredom, and walks off.
Wait, wait here, ladies.
Duncan runs after him.
Do you want more coke?
Forget this.
Forget this?
We forget this.
Well, there's lots more for you to have a go on. I could get others. St. Mary's is just down the road. And they're all Catholic.
Duncan trips and Didier carries on across the grass. A group of boys come by and help Duncan to his feet.
He's bored. He's so bored. Doesn't know what to do.
Duncan looks up to the sky.
That? It's just like dog.
Lee looks up from the camera as the dog flies by a tree.
Whoa, whoa, mind the trees!
With Will struggling to control it, the dog bounces off the tree canopy and swings towards the school roof.
I can't control it! Why are you going towards the building? Look!
The dog kite powers through the air, pulling Will closer and closer to the school building. Lee sprints after him. He grabs Will round the stomach and the kite drags them both along the grass at speed. A group of boys pop up from behind a fallen log and watch. In a science room, a bearded teacher sits at a desk, trimming his nose hairs.
Hold on!
The kite zooms through the classroom window, slides along a table, and hits the fire alarm with its nose. The teacher who dived for cover comes out from under the lab desk with the scissors stuck up his nose. He pulls them out with a whimper and runs to the window.
Got the shot.
All right, Skills. Get my camera and put it in your locker and don't let anyone see you or you'll be in deep shit.
I'll catch up with you later.
You'll get in trouble. You'll be tortured again.
I won't. Don't worry. Just come.
Will sprints along the grass to retrieve the video camera on its tripod. Behind him, Lee tries to leg it but is intercepted by the teacher who drags him off.
Where's my book?
Behind a bush, Duncan and two of his friends have Will's sketchbook. They look at the penciled storyboard for the boys' film. Clearly impressed, Duncan nods his head and closes the book. Outside school, the teacher leads Lee past a mob of baying kids.
Lee Carter! Don't worry, it's like a week's suspension!
The kids hurl balls of paper at Lee as he gets into his brother's open-topped car. Lee waves as Lawrence drives off. Tina sashays over to Will.
Gonna miss your scabby little friend.
Inside, now!
In his car, Lawrence is on a brick-sized mobile.
What? You said you were coming back last week. What? What? Look, hold on a sec, mate. Where's Mum?
Oh, Skills, say hello for me.
Yeah, he says hello. Hello back. Right, well, now that everyone's done saying hello, when are you coming back? Because the place is turning into a shithole.
In a toilet cubicle, Will sits with his shoulders slumped, wearing a mournful expression. Slowly, he looks up towards the ceiling. Three heads pop over the cubicle door. It's ginger-haired Duncan and his two friends. Duncan beckons to Will with his head. Will points to himself and mouths, "Me?" Outside school, Duncan and his friends lead Will across the columned pathway towards the school chapel. Inside, Duncan holds the door open for Will and stands in the doorway as Will steps through tentatively. Duncan nods at him and leaves him in the chapel. At the end of an aisle, a hand lights a candle with a match and then ignites the end of a cigarette. Didier takes a deep puff and exhales. A shaft of golden sunlight pours through a window and illuminates the altar on which Didier is standing. Coolly, he slinks into the light and points a gun down the aisle towards Will.
You live by the gun. You die by the gun.
He steps down from the altar and walks towards Will.
We are a soldier. We know only to fight. Une balle.
Subtitles read, one bullet, one death. Didier points the gun at Will's forehead.
Mis à mort. J'ai bien étudié Patrick Swayze, non?
Subtitles read, I'm just like Patrick Swayze, no? Badgerhead Didier points the toy gun at his own temple and pulls the trigger. He shakes and falls to the floor.
I see the light in the sky. Adieu.
Hammerly, Didier's body jerks and his head slumps back onto the floor of the aisle. Will looks at him, unconvinced.
You make movie? Will be star of movie is my dream, my friend.
You want to be in our film?
Yeah, yeah.
Didier reaches for Will's book in a pew.
My book?
Didier looks at the pages, shaking his head, and slams it shut.
I will be star of your movie. Do you want some bubble gum?
Didier, a good foot taller than Will, hands him a stick of gum. Here are my men, he says. They'll be at your disposal. Duncan and three friends salute Will with ties wrapped around their heads.
Mon nom est Didier.
Didier introduces himself and shakes Will by the hand.
I'm French, no?
Outside the care home, Lee, wearing his colonel's cap, is energetically soaping a window. Behind an old man sitting on a chair in his room, gazing vacantly ahead, a big hip nurse comes to the window.
Yes, what you doing, mate? It has to be cleaner when I'm not playing with it. Put some help on, please, with it. Listen, mate. Maybe I'll put this to clean my window. I'm putting some of the things in the window. What are you doing?
In the school staff room, the bearded teacher looks at his bandaged nose in a mirror.
There you go, Mike.
Cheers, Keith.
On the upside, we do get to spend a glorious week without Devil Charm Carter.
Yeah.
Mike, the teacher, crosses to the refreshment counter. Another teacher brings the plastic guide dog out from behind it.
Jesus Christ! You stupid bastard! Lobs!
Mike storms out in a rage as the staff room ripples with mocking laughter. In a wood, Will is dressed as Son of Rambo, with a vest on and a piece of fabric tied around his head. He stuffs a stick of gum into his mouth and runs ahead. Three kids dressed as ninjas jump out and surround him. As Will prepares to fight them off, Didier, also dressed in a Rambo costume, leaps through the air in slow motion. He karate chops one ninja and pretends to high kick another. The last one he dispatches with a fake backhander to the face. Will smiles and looks up at him.
They call me the Wolf. I know the earth. I know the sky. And I know the tree.
I am Son of Rambo. I come in peace to you, Wolf.
Salut, Son of Rambo.
I'm trying to find my dad.
They both drop to their knees.
We go by there and by there. And I help you to find your daddy man.
Oh, thanks ever so much. Let's go!
Will runs to the camera.
And cut. That was great!
English fool!
Ha!
Thanks.
The film crew leave the woods.
Where did you get that gun?
The wolf is bad, no?
It looks real.
Yeah.
Oh, and just so you know, cut means stop.
It's not a problem for me.
One last word to those of you out there. You can still enter for the Young Filmmakers Competition. You need to be under 17 next August the 30th. But here's an address for you to write to Screen Test, BBC Television.
Didier leads Will and his entourage down a school corridor towards the common room. At the door of the common room, a teenage bouncer with a spiky punk haircut eyes them as they approach. He opens the door for Didier, but stops Will.
It's okay. He's with me.
He lets Will and the others through. In the garage, Lee's watching the video.
Better swing across the lake. I'll get back up. I'll meet you in the prison in 1 hour.
With his green beret on, Lee puffs at a cigarette as he watches the footage of Will jumping from the rope swing into the lake. In the school grounds, Will traipses along the high wall. Lee sprints up and bundles him into the alley. Duncan and friends pin Lee against the wall.
Okay, he's only joking. He always does that, don't you, Lee Carter?
Stop.
Oh. Wait, wait! They're going to help us make the film. He's from France, and he's an actor, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Will takes Lee aside.
They wanted to be in our film. They're on our side. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, but they hate me.
Not anymore. And Didier is a really amazing actor. It's going to be skill.
Skill?
Yeah, skill.
Nah. Look, it doesn't sound right when you say things like me. Just keep your spazzy way of saying stuff.
The boys, all in their grey uniforms, emerge from the alley walking behind Didier, who's wearing a printed sleeveless vest, skin-tight black jeans and a chain around his waist. In a metalwork class, pupils wearing aprons file and saw away at bits of metal and vices. Lee puts a dented metal bucket over his head, into which a slit for a mouth has been cut, and comes up to Will.
I am the evil scarecrow prepared to die.
In this diagram, there are 20 small squares in each rectangle. The diagram shows 1 foot, subtract 1 foot, 5 squares.
In another class, Will hands his sketchbook to a boy with a shaved head. The boy looks at it with a smile. Inside, Will's drawn a picture of Didier's character, Wolf. Didier leads his entourage plus Will and Lee down the corridor towards the common room. Will beams proudly. At the door, the bouncer lets Didier and Will through, but refuses Lee.
It's okay, he's with me.
This week's Top 40 on Radio 1,
number 16.
In the common room, Will and Lee come through a crowd of sixth formers dressed as New Romantics. Pictures of Nick Kershaw and Adam Ant are pinned to the wall.
We're in the sixth form common room!
What are we doing here?
It's great, isn't it?
A blonde girl in a zebra print dress bumps into Lee and scowls at him. He looks distinctly unimpressed. Will goes to a table where a girl with a baggy shirt and gelled hair sits next to a girl with dark, slick back hair. There's an assortment of novelty erasers on the table. One of the girls hands one to Will. He sniffs it and holds it out to Lee.
It smells like real cake!
Lee sniffs it and hands it back to the girl, unmoved. A guy with black eyeliner and lipstick tips a packet of Space Dust popping candy into his mouth. A tall sixth former dressed as a casual in a yellow t-shirt and a gold chain around his neck talks to Will.
Your film's going to be on screen test, yeah?
Yes!
Skill.
The sixth former gives Will a packet of popping candy and a can of Coke. As Will sips at the Coke, Tina taps him on the shoulder.
Are you that little boy making a film with Didier?
Mm-hmm.
Can we be in it?
Please.
Those earrings make you look like an angel.
Tina touches her dangly earrings self-consciously. Lee creeps into an area where a couple is snogging and some girls are dancing. He trips over and looks at the girls' feet, clad in pointy shoes and pixie boots. One of them is wearing roller skates with yellow wheels. A girl goth with purple lipstick licks a temporary tattoo and prints it onto Will's forearm.
There you go.
He turns and sees Didier leading a line of girls in a dance routine. He does a robotic arm movement and beckons to Will. Lee hurries over to Will.
Come on, we gotta get out of here! We might need to ride!
Yeah, but it's rubbish, I hate it!
Will pulls away from Lee and makes a beeline over to Didier on the dance floor. Lee slouches off. Will jumps up and down like a jack-in-the-box, and Didier copies him. The girls notice Didier jumping up and down and they start to do the same. Everyone piles onto the dance floor and joins in. Lee comes out of the fire door and mopes on the steps outside. A student bursts out behind him and throws up violently over the railings. The teenager heads back inside, leaving Lee sitting on the steps looking dejected. At home in bed, in his attic room, Will sketches more of the film's storyboard into his book. His mother comes to sit on the bed. Will drops his book to the floor.
When I was your age, I always used to walk past this bakery on the way to prayer meeting. And I remember passing one day and hearing the most wonderful music coming from the radio inside, and it really was like the sweetest hymn I'd ever heard. I couldn't get it out of my head. And I always used to walk past the bakery hoping to hear it again, but of course I never did. So I found a record player. I bought the song from a record shop and I had to hum the tune to the salesman because I didn't know its name. And I couldn't wait to get it home. I was so excited. I wanted my mum and dad to hear it.
Three solemn-looking men knock at the door of young Mary's house. Later, her record player has been thrown on a bonfire.
He was protecting me and our way of life. Promise me you'll put these things out of your mind, William.
I promise.
I know it's hard, but it's for your own good in the long run.
I'll never betray the brethren again. I promise.
Mary bends over to kiss her son.
Good night, my darling.
She leaves the room and switches the light off. Will watches her go, then puts his Rambo headband on and sits up. It's dark, out in a field of tall grass. The scarecrow stands with its branch-like arms extended and its painted bucket head drooped down as if it were asleep. Its sackcloth garments, which are as thin as gossamer and almost transparent, flutter in the light breeze. Yanking its head backwards, the scarecrow glides swiftly through the grass and into the night. In an underground stairway, a chubby-faced boy with curly brown hair called Danny comes down holding a flashlight. At the bottom of the steps, he hears something and passes through a doorway beyond which is a tunnel. The scarecrow moves towards him. Danny turns and points the flashlight. Two boys emerge from inside the scarecrow.
You're late.
Danny scowls at them.
Kiss my arse.
Oh yeah, you and whose army?
What? That's us away. And he says...
Oi, what are you lot doing here?
This one's no one.
What?
That's your funeral, Popeye.
Jesus, everyone's gone mental.
Will's sitting in the tunnel in costume. Duncan comes over with coloured gel covering a flashlight.
All right then. Is this where you wanted?
Yes, thank you, Duncan.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Isn't he brilliant?
He looks like a complete cock.
Can I have some Coca-Cola?
Coca-Cola, cabin.
Didier struts in, dressed as Wolf, followed by adoring Tina. Lee, in the colonel costume, shakes his head doubtfully. The camera points at Didier.
I feel the evil.
He's an evil.
Shh! Let me close the door.
Didier, Will, and Lee creep into a room where the scarecrow is lurking.
I am the scarecrow. Best die.
Stand back! I'll take him!
Guards! Jump on the bar!
Lee whacks the scarecrow head with a stick, aiming one blow at Didier, who falls to the floor.
He's dead! Not dead! It's just concussion! Come back to us!
Come back to us!
He's moving!
The entourage help Didier up and carry him away. Will confronts Lee.
What did you do that for?
I was acting.
You hit him in the face.
Yeah, it's my film.
You said it was my film.
Yeah, well, I like your film. I'm taking it back.
Will storms off.
Oh, wait, give
take that back.
Lee grabs the camera. It's early morning. At her home, Mary's asleep in bed with Jess by her side. Carrying his torch, Will trudges into his room and sits on the end of his bed. Switching off his torch, he drops back onto the mattress, then starts as he hears a stone being thrown at his sloping window.
Oi!
He pushes back the curtain. Lee's outside.
Peace! Blood Brothers!
Shh! We're not filming for another 5 hours!
I'm coming up!
Lee grabs at some vines covering a drainpipe. He tries to climb up, but falls backwards.
Oh.
Indoors, Mary wakes up.
You're breaking my house!
You won't let me in then, you bastard!
I'll get in trouble if anyone sees you.
Oh, for Christ's sakes, look, I'm sorry, okay?
Shh!
Look, can't we just go back to the
house? Sleepily, Mary pulls back the bed cover.
It was better when it was just us two.
You said it was my film, and now you want to ruin it on the last day.
No, it's not you, it's them. I hate them.
Two-faced.
You know, I come all this way just to say sorry. I even bought you a present, you ungrateful little bastard. Wait, Will!
Will throws Lee's present back at him, closes the window and flops face down on his bed as Mary eavesdrops. Outside the garage forecourt, Lee kicks the wrapped present into a clump of bushes and leaves with his shoulders slumped, taking his video camera with him. In the opulent hallway of his house, he sits bouncing a ball off the wall. At his house, Will, wearing his parka, creeps down the stairs, glancing behind him as he goes. Reaching the bottom, he sees his mother in front of him, sitting with her hands clasped to her chin, looking troubled and tired. She raises her eyes to him.
You look so tired, William.
She looks away from him. Will spots something out of the window behind her.
What's he doing here?
Joshua's taking you away for a few days.
Will!
Will makes a run for it.
William! William! What is wrong with you, brother? You are bringing shame on this family!
Let go of me!
It's over. You're coming with me now!
You're not my dad!
We're brethren!
I hate the brethren! And I hate you!
Stop!
Will pulls away sharply from Joshua, sending him sprawling to the ground, and sprints down the road. Mary stops by Joshua, who's back on his feet, and they watch him run away. Spikes of sunlight shine through the jagged smile of the scarecrow's head. Will arrives at the disused power plant and grins as Duncan comes over to him.
Thank goodness you're here. Guns are over there. Scarecrow head's here.
You look lovely, ladies. Keep it up. And we're just about to get the car started.
Tina.
Is this all right, Will?
Perfect. Get ready. Good morning, Didier.
Good morning.
What'd you say you're doing? Get back to work.
Yeah.
Well done, guys. Keep at it. Is this all right, Will? A bit more green paint.
You worked in green paint.
Finally got blue.
Lee arrives.
What? What's Z-Wolf doing in my costume?
He's driving the Jeep for the getaway team.
Yeah, but I'm Trouman. I'm driving the Jeep.
You can't drive.
It's a piece of piss.
Don't be stupid.
All right, then. Well, if I'm not needed,
I'll be taking my camera back, then.
You promise?
Yeah? And what do you know about promises, love brother?
Don't push it.
Yeah?
You need to grow up. You drew first blood, and you're a head case.
It's just a scab. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't hurt.
Lee marches back to Will and plants the camera tripod down.
Yeah? Does that hurt?
Huh?
He shoves Will to the ground. Will grabs a hunk of wood, gets up and hits Lee across the back as he faces down the chanting group of kids. The two boys struggle. One boy throws a stone at Lee, and he dashes out of the gates chased by the baying school kids. Will shouts at Lee. Will tosses a stone at Lee and it hits him in the face. Lee runs off.
He's gone now! Let's make the movie!
Didier and Will sit in a jeep.
Hurry up, people! We're losing light!
Wire fencing is put up in front of the jeep. Tina and her friends wear scarecrow heads.
Come on, this thing stinks!
Sorry! Okay, ready?
Stand by, everybody! Stand by!
Action!
Didier drives the jeep through the fencing as Will films from the passenger seat. As Didier smokes a cigarette, Will turns the camera on himself.
Step on it, Charlton! We're gonna save Mike's dad!
The cigarette falls from Didier's mouth and he lets go of the steering wheel. The out-of-control jeep crashes into an iron girder and Will goes flying from his seat into a tar pit. A sheet of corrugated iron tips over, trapping him. Seeing debris falling from a nearby building, Didier jumps from the jeep and legs it. Everyone flees from the site, leaving Will trapped in the tar pit under a sheet of corrugated iron. Thick, oily black liquid bubbles out of a hole in the sheeting. As small bits of debris continue dropping down, a pair of boots appears by the sheet metal, and a young pair of hands lifts it up. Lee throws the corrugated iron aside and pulls Will's limp body out of the tar pit. He stands him up and slams him against a wall.
I don't care what you and your so-called mate say about me, but don't you ever, ever call my brother a scab. You know, at least he's there for me. At least he cares about me, which is more than I can say for you, blood brother. You're a two-faced fake like the rest of them, and I'm gutted it took me this long to work it out. I'm gutted I fell for it, Will. Lawrence is better than you and all that lot put together, and he's all I've got, right? He's all I've got. I didn't come back for you anyway. Where's my camera?
Will, covered in tar, shivers as he staggers away, leaving Lee sobbing against the wall. Will moves slowly over to the jeep, which has crashed into a support girder. As he reaches into it to grab the camera, the girder falls and large bits of debris drop near Lee. An old walkway falls away from the building and metal crates and rubble tumble towards Lee. Didier nervously smokes a cigarette as an ambulance races by. Lee, lying on a gurney, is wheeled hurriedly down a hospital corridor by two medics and a nurse. As a nurse stitches up Will's arm, he stares out blankly, his skin spattered with tar, his Rambo headband on.
William, do you know where your friend lives? We need to contact his family.
His eyes flicker towards a policeman sitting in front of him. At Mary's house, Granny sits on her armchair, and Jess kneels at a low table playing a game. Through the hatch in the kitchen, Mary washes dishes in silence. Will is standing a few feet away, munching on a piece of apple. Calmly, she puts down a dish, turns and composes herself. She crosses the kitchen, passing Will, and answers the front door. Joshua is standing there with two men.
Sister Mary?
Brother Joshua?
We've come to discuss your future with the brethren.
She lets them in.
Mary, I feel it best to come straight to the point. We've had a group meeting, and it has been decided that this must be your final warning. If the boy isn't corrected, I'm afraid you and the family would face expulsion from the brethren.
In the garden shed, Will flicks through one of his page flip animations. The drawings show his dad mowing the lawn and being hit by a bolt of lightning. Will puts a piece of apple in his mouse box and gives in to his tears. His mother appears behind the glass pane of the shed door.
To talk to you. It's just me. Please come out there.
They spoiled everything. Everything's ruined.
She comes into the shed in her floor-length dress and cradles his head in her hands.
Are they going to throw us out?
Everything's all right.
She takes her headscarf off and lets her hair fall free. Resting her chin on Will's head, she sobs. Little Jess comes in and sits next to them. She's carrying the wrapped present that Lee brought round. Mary hugs her.
I found a present in the garden.
She hands the present to Will and he unwraps it. It's his dad's wristwatch in a blue gift box. He holds it up and lets out a deep sigh as his mother strokes his hair. In the corner of the shed, she hugs her two children close to her. Next to them, their father's overcoat hangs from the door like an old shroud. It's daytime outside the school building. A crowd of pupils have gathered by a coach to see off the French exchange students who are climbing aboard. French students wave back as they get onto the bus. Didier is the last in line. Some of the English kids step out of the crowd to give him presents.
Thanks.
Tina gives him a gift and lingers. He pushes her firmly back into the crowd.
Thank you.
A small boy gives him a wrapped teddy bear. A girl gives him a bunch of daffodils. Just as Didier gets to the coach door, Duncan gives him a card and looks up at him dolefully. Didier smiles and nods.
Au revoir, l'Angleterre.
The coach door slides behind him. Duncan bows his head and is comforted by a male teacher. As the coach drives out, some of the children chase it and wave up at the windows. Inside the coach, Didier sits at the back on his own, away from the others. The coach breaks and his presents go flying. The girl with the train tracks picks up the daffodils with a sneer. Goodbye, England, she mimics sarcastically and throws the daffs at him with a snort. English fools. Didier, looking down at his flowers, seems uncharacteristically moved. In hospital, Will, holding a wrapped present, sheepishly follows a nurse down a corridor. She leads him into a room where Lee is asleep with his left leg in a cast. Will warily steps over to the side of the bed and looks down at Lee's swollen eye. As Lee stirs, he hands him the present. Lee looks at it, then drops it over the side of the bed.
I'm sorry.
He turns away from Will. Will leaves with his head bowed. The tall, thin nurse leans over the bed and Lee whispers something to her. Lawrence shows up with his two mates, dressed in a yellow polo neck with a diamond-cut jumper over the top. Lawrence comes into the room and addresses the nurse.
What's he saying?
He said you're his brother.
This isn't my fault.
He just wants you to take this home for him.
The nurse hands Lawrence a cardboard box with a bashed-up video camera inside it.
Look at the state of it.
Lee, lying on his bed with an unhappy expression, doesn't look up at his brother.
It's ruined.
He's been a very brave little boy, Mr. Carter.
The nurse leaves the room. Lawrence stares ahead for a moment and turns on his heel, following her out. Lee sighs unhappily. Outside by his car, Lawrence is on his mobile as his mates fight to open the passenger door.
You did! Oh, what did you do it?
I've got the mic. Mum, it's me.
One time, it's Lawrence. Always get it.
Lawrence!
You always have to get so violent.
Well, it's not a good time for me either.
This is what it's like.
What? What?
Get out of here!
Look, I can't even...
He throws down the mobile and butts his head against the steering wheel.
Get out of my car.
Out!
His mates get out of the car and swagger off. The car spews black smoke from its exhaust. In his hospital room, Lee is watching TV.
A
of our young filmmakers competition. Let me have the honour of presenting you with this on behalf of the judges and, of course, the BBC with our very hearty congratulations.
Thank you very much
for that super film.
Thanks, yeah. And, of course, we'll be presenting the screen test.
He presses the remote and turns off the TV with a sad, numb face. At Will's house, Joshua sits with the family at dinner.
Not aging, William. You should be thankful for what your mother's cooked for you.
Would you like to get down, lovely?
My mother wouldn't let me get down from the table until I finished everything on my plate.
Will leaves the table.
Doesn't the warning mean anything to you, Mary? You know what happens if you don't teach him properly.
Joshua, at the head of the table, takes a forkful of food, his face set in his pious, disapproving expression. Mary straightens her back, slips off her headscarf, and gets up from the table. She puts her plate on the counter and whips Joshua's plate of unfinished food away from him. Taken aback, Joshua turns to look at Granny, who stares stonily back at him. Coming out of the house, he hurries down the drive towards the open gate. Hearing the cheers from the kitchen, he glances back and quickens his pace. In the cavernous storage garage at his house, Lawrence presses play on the VCR.
You know, at least he's there for me. At least he cares about me. Which is more than I can say for you, my brother. You're a two-faced partner, the rest of my cousin. It's obvious not to work out. I'm just not bad for it, Will. Lawrence is better than you, and all my love works together. And it's all I've got, right? It's all I've got.
Wearing a toweling robe, tracksuit bottoms and slippers, Lawrence presses stop and goes to answer the garage door. Will is outside in his parka coat. He steps forward and offers Lawrence his dad's watch.
This belongs to you.
Lawrence beckons him inside and looks down at the watch. He unclasps it and puts it on. Will crosses to the video camera, which is lying in pieces, and inspects one of the parts.
Is it broken?
Lawrence nods.
Can you fix it?
He looks at Lawrence imploringly. In an ambulance, Lee sits with a pair of crutches next to him, his head slumped, his face morose. A kindly ambulance man leans in towards him.
Cheer up, Sam. You're going home.
Exactly.
The ambulance man looks out of the window and gets to his feet.
Here we are then.
He opens the back doors and Lee hobbles out on his wooden crutches. He looks confused when he sees that they've parked outside the cinema.
What's this?
Gotta find out.
The ambulance man puts his cap on and strides towards the entrance steps of the cinema. He stops and waits for Lee to catch up. A couple hurry into the cinema, which is showing the film Yentl. Inside, the auditorium is packed.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight's showing of Yentl shall be preceded by a special short film that we're sure you will enjoy.
The ambulance man guides Lee to a seat. On the cinema screen, hand-drawn titles appear. Carter and Proudfoot present Son of Rambo.
They took my father, Troutman. They drew first blood. Gonna need guns. Loads of really massive guns.
Let's go.
Lee sinks into his seat with embarrassment as he watches himself and Will on screen.
What is that?
He lightens up as he notices people in the cinema are smiling.
Let's split up. Okay! Ah!
The corners, take cover! Okay!
Lee laughs as he watches Will drop into the water off the rope swing. A page flip animation reads, "Meanwhile," and Diddy appears as Wolf.
The gun is a wolf.
I need to find my dad.
I help you to find your daddy, man.
I need for Scarecrow prepared to die.
Lee whacks Didier with a stick.
What?
You killed the wolf!
Yeah, he was a traitor. I could see it was all a trap set by the evil scarecrow.
Good work, Colonel.
I can't thank you enough. You save your father. I'll get the chopper so we can escape.
Will bursts into a room where an old man wears a long red wig.
I've come to save you, Rambo! We need to leave here right now, before the evil scarecrow finds us!
Will, the son of Rambo, fights with the evil scarecrow. He knocks it to the ground.
You and son of Rambo, do me one favour before you go.
What?
Lawrence is playing the scarecrow.
Tell my brother I was thinking of him.
I didn't know you had a brother.
Yes, Colonel Trautman is my brother. Yes, he is. And when you see my brother, tell him I'm sorry. I haven't been there for him and that, yeah? And say, I know we haven't been much of a family and all that, but, well, he's all I've got too.
God bless you, evil scarecrow.
Yeah, all right. Let me die in peace with him.
Lawrence puts the scarecrow head back on and pretends to die.
Dad, I'm going home. There's a friend I've got to be with.
Will runs off carrying a giant rag doll dressed up to look like John Rambo.
Thank you for your love today. Thank you for my family and all the friends you give to me. Guard me in the dark of night and in the morning send your light. Amen.
A hand-drawn rolling credit announces the end. Lee rubs a tear from his cheek. On the aisle directly above him, Will kneels behind his friend and taps him on the shoulder.
Carter?
My brother is the worst actor ever.
He is pretty bad.
Yeah, he's even worse than that bloody French kid.
Better go. Yeah.
Will hands Lee his crutches as he hops up from the cinema seat.
Thanks. Son of Rambo?
Yes, Colonel?
This has been my best day of all time.
Will guides him down the exit steps as the auditorium darkens and the screen fades to black. IMS audio description was by Veronica Hicks for Optimum Releasing. A Hammer and Tongs film, starring Will Poulter, Bill Milner and Jules Sitrick. Cast in order of appearance. Joshua was played by Neil Dudgeon. Will Proudfoot, Bill Milner. Mary Proudfoot, Jessica Stevenson. Grandma, Anna Wing. Lee Carter, Will Poulter. Jess Proudfoot, Tallulah Evans. French teacher, Emile Chesney. Geography teacher, Paul Ritter. Gail Graham, Fiona McMahon. Mayor Plant, Rachel Muratroyd. David Smart, Taylor Richardson. Lucas Dupuin, Peter Robinson. Duncan Miller, Charlie Thrift. Didier Ravol, Jules Sitrick. Danny, Sam Kubrick-Finney. Sean, Jamie Clark. Tina, Sophia Brooks. Orderly, Denise Orita. Frank, Eric Sykes. Lawrence, Ed Westwick. Lawrence's henchman, Lee Long, Adam Paul Harvey. Cobbler, Dave Shaw. Rambo Double, Attila Emirali. Brethren Leader, Adam Godley. Brethren Boy, Asa Butterfield. Science Teacher, Adam Buxton. Metalwork Teacher, Edgar Wright. Young Mary, Imogen Aboud. Nurse, Louise Jennings. Policeman, Sam Spivak. Medic, Robert Stiles. Written and directed by Garth Jennings. Produced by Nick Goldsmith. Executive Producer, Kungame Panahi. Executive Producers, Benjamin Goldhirsch and Bristol Bourne. Line Producer, Jane Robertson. Associate Producers, Christian Bort, Misha Relak, Peter Nederman, Meinl Zurholz. Production Manager, Pascal Metge. Editor, Dominic Lung. Director of Photography, Jess Hall. Music, Joby Talbot. Costume Designer, Harriet Hawley. Makeup Designer, Natalie Tissier. Sound Recordist, Guillaume Xiama. Supervising Sound Editor, Joseph Parks Tracy. Music, I Can't Wait, performed by New Shoes. Written by John Robert Smith. Myself, so sick, so Wild Boys, performed by Duran Duran, written by Simon Le Bon, Nick Rhodes, Andy Taylor, John Taylor, Roger Taylor. Peekaboo, performed by Susie and the Banshees, written by Sue, Severin, Budgie, Harry Warren, and John Mercer. Cars, performed by Gary Newman, written by Gary Newman. Egyptian Reggae, performed by Jonathan Richman, written by Jonathan Richman, Earl Anthony Johnson. Close to Me, remix performed by The Cure, written by Robert Smith. I Just Can't Get Enough, performed by Depeche Mode, written by Vince Clarke. E Luce Van Le Stelle, performed by Orchestre de la Société des Concerts de Conservatoire and Carlo Bergonzi, composed by Puccini. Die Walküre, Ride of the Valkyries, performed by Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra and Klaus Tennstedt, composed by Wagner. BBC Radio Positron, cut number 8 and number, composers Jonathan M. Wolfert and Christopher Kershaw. Original music published by Chester Music Limited, a UK-France co-production developed by Film 4. Thanks to Sylvester Stallone, Brian Dennehy, Richard Crenna Estate, Brian Truman, Jan Pinkava, Hugh Whittaker, Darren Smith, Justin Bennett, Keith Faulkner, Ron Taylor, Kevin O'Shea, Ashlyn School, Thomas Coram School, Bridgewater School, Tring High School, Charles Dickens School.
By the way, you spelt the title slightly wrong. There's no W in Rambo.
Oh, okay.
Still good though.